You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
All right, welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Macro, everybody. And let's send you into March with all that you need to know about the state of macroeconomic affairs today. This is the podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we, as you know, discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events. I'm Ahalya, keeping you company. And as always, we've got with us Srijit Balasubramanian, economist in the fixed income fund management team, to help us unpack all of it. The theme in question today is, of course, the continued action that 2025 brings our way. Now, since our previous episode, we had India's union budget, a monetary policy meeting, and various other actions by the RBI, and a lot of stuff on the global front with central bank meetings and Trump's policies in his first month of presidency. Lots of action there, as expected, and as we had teased, without even knowing what was coming our way in the previous episode. So on today's podcast, we're going to discuss the key fiscal points from the budget, the impact of the RBI's recent policy measures, and then probably the most important economic factor in today's world, the US dollar. We're going to look at why it's crucial, what it means for emerging markets like India, and how it could play out from here. Welcome, Srijit. Lots to discuss today. I hope you're ready.
Yeah, Ahalya, thank you. Sorry, I have a bit of a bad throat today.
No problem. I'm sure the wealth of information coming our way is still going to be of top-notch quality. And hope you get well soon, Srijit. Thank you for being here. Now, let's start off with India's union budget. You spoke about it on the last podcast as well. It was the union budget for financial year 2026. So how do the numbers look and what are your key takeaways? We've heard a lot about, of course, that, you know, tax exemption. Everyone's super excited about it. But what are the macroeconomic ripple effects from it?
Okay, so for this year, that is FY 2025, the budget pegs India's fiscal deficit at 4.8% of GDP, which is slightly down from the 4.9% number that was budgeted earlier. Now, this was expected. This capital expenditure has been moderate in this year, you know, particularly earlier in the year due to elections. In FY 2026, the next year, fiscal deficit is budgeted at 440. Again, as expected, because the government had already said it would target less than 4.5% next year. So within this fiscal consolidation, it is income tax rates, like you said, which is estimated to have an impact of around 1 trillion rupees. This space has been carved out because total budget expenditure will, you know, grow below normal GDP growth, which is assumed reasonably at around 10.1%, by the way. This is next year, and overall tax buoyancy is estimated towards the upper end of likely outcomes. And it is also estimated a heavy number on RBI dividends, or the surplus transfer to the government, which is very likely possible. You know, the RBI FX intervention over the last few months in the spot market has been substantial, and income on foreign securities should also be high given higher yields. Although some of this will be offset by losses in the forward market and so on. So quite a heavy number on the RBI dividend is expected to continue. So the FY 26 numbers seem quite okay, although tax revenue needs to be closely watched. Also, how much of the income tax cut really translates into household consumption, that will need to be seen, because, you know, households would not just consume, but they'll also save and deleverage from the extra income, especially as we know now the leverage among households has been higher. So we'll have to see how much of that impact, you know, really translates into consumption.
You know, that's very, very true. And I think one of the other conversations that were happening simultaneously was also that of how much of this money saved will go into investments, right? So I think a lot there, it's seeming more like a gamble the more we proceed into the future. But like you said, we'll have to keep our eye on it. Now, it does seem like overall reasonable numbers there for, you know, financial year 25 and 26. But how does the medium term fiscal situation look, and what's the path there? How credible is that?
From FY 27, the government will basically shift to a debt to GDP based framework, and it'll target around, you know, 50% plus or minus 1% of debt to GDP in FY 31. So in 4 years, this seems reasonable and roughly implies fiscal deficit in the 4 to 4.5% range. It also allows fiscal to cyclically respond to any economic situation that might arise. Given RBI dividend may not be perpetual, tax revenue buoyancy is also normalizing. And if you see, the total expenditure to GDP is now back at pre-pandemic levels, and the government may not want to not want it to fall further. Therefore, the onus of maintaining this fiscal balance and the glide path could fall on disinvestments in asset monetization. So far, we've not seen a clear strategy on this, but this has to kind of pick up sooner than later. And the other point is also that we'll also have to see whether the government starts to offload some of its capital expenditure back to public sector enterprises. But this will be a sort of partial reversal of what it has been doing in the last few years, where it has been onboarding some of the, you know, PSE capex into its own budget. So these are our two key observations. One is on disinvestments in asset monetization, and second is on how much of the capex gets split between the PSEs and the central government itself. But that's broadly what we see in the medium term.
Okay, so realistic fiscal numbers in the medium term, but I guess, like you're saying, disinvestments and asset monetization need some real prioritization and focus. Turning to India's monetary policy, the RBI has been taking various actions on rates and liquidity of late. What do you make of that?
We actually discussed last month that banking system liquidity has been tight despite the cash reserve ratio, the CRR cut. Because of RBI's US dollar sales and, you know, the high currency in circulation, which were draining liquidity. Now, we sort of expected the RBI to announce measures to infuse liquidity, and it did. It has been conducting daily variable rate repo operations, the VRRs, and even longer term VRRs, FX swaps, and most importantly, OMO purchases, that is the open market operations, to infuse permanent liquidity. That's it. It needs to do more because the natural drain from currency in circulation and any RBI FX sales will continue to reduce liquidity over the next few months, at least until the RBI dividend transfer happens in late May. So more liquidity is needed for the smooth operation of the banking system also now, and even for the effective transmission of the 25 basis points repo rate cut, the policy rate cut it not did earlier this month. So RBI's measures are definitely welcome. The rate cut cycle is likely a shallow one, like we discussed, with maybe another 50 basis points left. But the system certainly needs more liquidity.
Okay, so it's interesting, you know, that liquidity is the key not just to offset the reduction, but also to run the banking system smoothly and transmit rate cuts.
Yeah.
So that's on the domestic fiscal and monetary policy. Let's pivot the conversation now to the most talked about and headline-worthy news, that is the US dollar. Why do you think the US dollar as a factor is important, and what drives it in this macroeconomic landscape, Srijit?
See, the US dollar is important simply because it impacts financial conditions of economies, including emerging markets. Now, this is because of its status as a major reserve currency and the currency in which various trade and financial transactions are settled. This is why, for example, during times of crisis, the US Fed establishes swap facilities with various central banks to ensure availability of the US dollar. Now, higher US Treasury rates or stronger USD therefore effectively tightens financial conditions for emerging markets, which impact their, you know, capital flows, exchange rate, foreign currency, debt servicing, and so on, depending on the country's linkage with global flows. As we have seen, it could lead to more FX sales by central banks to defend their local currency, which, you know, therefore reduces banking system liquidity unless it is sterilized. So a tighter US dollar can become a constraint for emerging markets, within which they have to sort of pursue domestic macroeconomic policies, you know, focusing on their growth and inflation. Of course, among emerging markets, the relative economic health and outlook will also matter, and, you know, impact flows, exchange rates, and so on. The strength in USD until recently that we have seen, talking about the drivers, that is, was due to various factors like the massive Fed rate hikes that we saw, relatively weaker growth in other advanced economies, and most importantly, US exceptionalism, like we discussed last time. The exceptionalism part was driven by higher fiscal deficit, strong immigration, and higher productivity. But fundamentally, if you see, the two main pillars, businesses and households, have been really strong throughout. So for example, if you see, corporate profit has been high as effective tax and interest payments have been low. And this increased fixed investments by them in the economy. Aggregate household net worth has also picked up, given strong asset markets and even low effective mortgage rates. Of course, there are offsets within the aggregate corporate and household story. For example, like lesser savings among lower income households, incremental cost of home ownership, and even rising auto and credit card delinquencies. And let us also not forget that Fed policy rate is still quite high, and it has reduced its balance sheet size. But broadly, you know, this is why the US dollar is important for emerging markets, because in terms of financial conditions, it matters. And these are the broad drivers that have been sort of driving the US dollar in the last few years.
Okay, good to know. Thank you for that deep dive. But I also want to add to the conversation now the Trump trade that we did discuss in last month's podcast. Srijit, how does that add to all of this?
So, yeah, well, until recently, it did. This can be volatile. For example, Trump's policies on tariffs, tax cuts, and immigration were broadly seen as higher US rates and stronger US dollar, I mean, favoring them. But we have had more details recently. So, for example, Trump did not implement across-the-board tariffs as one would have expected initially. He gave a one-month period for Canada and Mexico before tariffs are implemented. And he implemented only 10% tariffs on China versus the 60% number that he had mentioned during his election campaign. Now, probably there's also been a better realization of the potential hit to growth from the mix of his policies on immigration, for example. The other thing could be that private investments could probably benefit from deregulation that he's been mentioning, but only to the extent of economic realities defined by, you know, demand, supply and profits and so on. So treasury yields and US dollar has come off. Both have actually come off in the last few weeks. But we'll have to see how this moves. And I mean, there is still a lot of uncertainty from Trump's policies and even global geopolitics. So the USD, in short, therefore, encompasses all these factors, the various drivers of it, and even the Trump trade to some extent, like you mentioned. And in a sense, the US growth and inflation dynamics, impact of various expected policies, geopolitics, and all those impacts other economies and their policymaking as well.
Okay, so, you know, to bring that back then, Srijit, you know, we've got the explanation of the impact of the US dollar on emerging markets. So how's it going to impact India?
So one, India's global linkage through trade and capital flows is moderate compared to other emerging market peers, but it's not completely insulated either. Two, currently India is amidst a cyclical slowdown. I think we discussed this last time. In fact, our real output in the last 5 years cumulatively is roughly 7% below what it would have been if the pandemic had not happened. Three, I think, is about where we are now. That is where India is now in terms of the impact from the US dollar already. Again, like we discussed, RBI has been selling dollars from early October last year, and it has also been intervening in the forward market to support the rupee. As a result, our balance of payments, the BOP, in the December quarter should most likely be in deficit. The fall in FX reserves, therefore, although nothing concerning, but definitely on the high side among emerging market peers. And this fall in FX reserves, along with the currency in circulation, drains our banking system liquidity. It is only from January that RBI started injecting liquidity through the various measures, you know, we just discussed. The USD sale but allows the RBI to book profits, as these dollars, you know, were acquired at a lower cost. And therefore, after all the mandated provisions are made, these are part of these profits, after the provisions are made, that is, are passed on as surplus to the government. But that's not the primary objective of nevertheless, you know, reserve adequacy and currency value, for example, versus its fair value, in a matter for external stability. Otherwise, excess intervention can backfire, for example. I mean, again, it's not in India's context, but I'm just helping you understand how it works. And therefore, FX management can really pose constraints to domestic policy on liquidity and rates. Now, for India, as we look ahead, the difficult question to answer would be on where the dollar is headed in terms of the direction and magnitude. I mean, yes, we have seen some fall in US rates and USD in the last few weeks, but there are still quite a few moving parts to the USD story. If FY25 ends with a BOP deficit, therefore the question will be whether FY26, the next year, will also be a deficit year. That's really difficult to tell at the moment. And therefore the important thing is for the RBI to stay nimble. And if the USD does happen to weaken, external constraints will ease and domestic policy can focus more on managing our growth and inflation.
All right. So the US dollar matters. And as we've seen, a tighter dollar can restrain domestic policy. So the RBI, as a result, must continue to stay nimble. Well, we're keeping it short and sweet this time, aren't we, Srijit? With that, we come to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for being with us, even with the sore throat. I guess macroeconomics keeps you so on your toes, you just can't resist hopping back on the series. But before we completely close out the episode, let me summarize the key takeaways for our listeners. Everyone, pay close attention.
Sure.
So first, India's union budget is slated to consolidate further in financial year 2026. Within that, the income tax rate cut has been provided, but we must see the final tax buoyancy and how much of the 1 trillion rupees cut translates into household consumption. The medium-term fiscal framework seems reasonable, but the government will soon have to focus on disinvestment and asset monetization, as a high RBI dividend from financial year 27 is not a given. After a period of unsterilized FX sale, mainly owing to a strong US dollar, the RBI has been taking measures to address tight liquidity, and it has also cut the repo rate, but needs to do more on liquidity in the next few months. Coming to the US dollar, it impacts financial conditions in emerging markets through trade and capital flows, and a stronger dollar can constrain domestic policy making in emerging markets. The dollar strength we witnessed in recent times was due to Fed rate hikes, US exceptionalism driven by robust businesses and households, although there are some offsets, weaker growth in most other advanced economies, and of course the Trump trade. While there is still quite a bit of uncertainty about Trump policies, US Treasury rates and the USD have moderated in the last few weeks. And finally, India is facing a cyclical growth moderation, and RBI has been selling dollars to support the rupee. While our FX reserves are still comfortable, it is important to realize that FX management does constrain domestic policy, and reserve adequacy matters for external stability. While the RBI is now injecting liquidity, going forward, it will have to stay nimble in managing its FX policy depending on the direction and magnitude of change in the US dollar. And that's it. Today's discussion hopefully was useful for our listeners. Thank you once again, Srijith, for being with us today.
Thank you, Alia. My pleasure.
All right. We'll be back with another episode of Let's Talk Macro next month to keep you all caught up. But for now, stay safe and stay happy.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.